I'm singing. I'm in a store and I'm singing. I'm in a store and I'm singing.
Hey, Merry Christmas, everyone. It's showtime.
Hey. Good morning and welcome in to this edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Hi there. Mark Congleton, your sometimes humble host here for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. And I'm hoping you're having a Marvy day. It is the Tuesday, December 17th, 2019 edition of the podcast. And it is a bug-free podcast as far as I know, and that's all I want to know. Thank you. Thank you very much. It is after yesterday. I want no more bugs. No more. That's all the bugs for 2019 and hopefully for 2020. It is a kind of a gray day in our neighborhood. We had some nasty weather come through, some storm damage. There were tornadoes spotted, some severe straight line winds. It was kind of a rough night for folks living in Alabama. And we kept waiting for it around our house, and it never really showed up at home. That's all I can say about that. My wife said she heard thunder. I never did. But then again, I can sleep through a train wreck, so there you have it. I'm just glad that there wasn't more. And we sort of kind of, it looks like we dodged the bullet, unless there's something I'm not aware of at this point. At any rate, hopefully things are good where you are. You're counting down till Christmas. It's, we're so close. We're a week away from Christmas Eve right now. And it's just, the excitement level for the kids is getting higher. The crowds at the shopping centers and the malls and the like are getting thicker, and hopefully you've got all of that done. I told you the story yesterday about our nightmare weekend Christmas shopping, and I hope that you don't have that, still more of that ahead of you. And if you're one of those who enjoys getting out in the crush and the hustle and bustle and all the stuff, please seek help. That's all I can say. Just please seek help. And maybe you're like, I have a couple of friends, and maybe you're like them, who Christmas shopping happens Christmas Eve at the convenience store near their house. And that's fine. If that's you, you do you. That's for me and us, our house. We have completed, I think, all of our Christmas shopping. Knock on fake wood. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood for everybody, I hope. And today, we've got some absurdity to talk about. We've got I really want to get to the story about what's really at stake in this Chick-fil-A stuff that's going on. You know, the conservatives and Christian people are kind of disappointed in Chick-fil-A because they found out recently that, they've stopped donating to a couple of notable and worthy Christian causes, and it has been learned that they're donating to some places that are not so worthy, in all honesty. And there's probably more at stake than just the bottom line, and I'd like to get to that, if at all possible, today. But before we get there, let's delve into the world of the ludicrous, the ridiculous, the goofy, because we have to. Remember Obamacare? How can you not remember Obamacare? It made your premiums go up. It took away your choice of doctor. It took away your choice of insurance plans. Even though we were promised, if you want to, you can keep your plan, you can keep your doctor. The promise was made again and again and again, countless times, and it was all a lie. And remember the website? You remember how goofy that website was? Billions of dollars. Wasn't it billions of dollars they spent developing that website, and it didn't work properly? Guess what? It still doesn't work. The U.S. government said yesterday the deadline for signing up for 2020 insurance plans under the Affordable Care Act has been extended by 3 days to December 18th. That's tomorrow. To accommodate those who experienced issues while attempting to enroll. There were website glitches and call center delays reported on Sunday, the earlier deadline for the 2020 open enrollment, and the extension should help the final enrollment tally, said Evercore ISI analyst Michael Neuschel. He said, the post-Thanksgiving ramp-up to signups was better than expected, and the momentum bodes well for the final surge, the key final surge, into the deadline of December 15th. He said that last week in a note. Apparently not. Last year, the number of people who signed up for 2019 health plans fell 4% to 8.5 million people from 2018, but saw a typical trend of last-minute shopping in the final week. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services runs enrollment for insurance plans created by the ACA, often called Obamacare, through the online marketplace, healthcare.gov, for 38 states. The problems with the site echoed the numerous issues reported by users when Obamacare first launched in October of 2013. Many pundits characterized healthcare.gov's 2013 launch as an unmitigated disaster, and it was. And apparently, they still have issues. Listen, I still firmly believe in the saying that if you want a job done wrong, give it to the government, because they spend way, 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 way more than they should have ever spent on the job. And when they're done, it's clunky, it's cumbersome, it's inefficient, and it makes people angry. It happens every time. And that's just the absurdity of how government runs things. I wonder how the healthcare.gov site stacks up to, I don't know, let's say a basic consumer website, a website that just sells stuff to people wanting to buy stuff. You know, you pick your various things, you go to the checkout, you put in your credit card information, or possibly you have it saved in your app or whatever, and you check out, and in a few days, your stuff comes to your door. I would say it doesn't compare favorably at all. I would say that if you stacked healthcare.gov up against Amazon, you would see that healthcare.gov is a mess. It is a royal mess. And it makes me wonder how much Amazon spent just developing their web presence in the beginning. Probably not nearly as much. And it's under constant change, constant updating, constant revision, and constant improvement. Can you say that for healthcare.gov? Not so much. It's still a mess. It's still a problem. And it's still run by the government. Remember, like I said, if you want a job done badly, give it to the government, because they don't understand what it means to do the job right, because there really aren't any consequences. Time and time again, we've had government projects which have been total disasters, and the people who were in charge of those disasters still work for the government. In the private sector, if there's a disaster, it all fails, and people have to look for other places to work. Not so in the government. Not so. Just think about the last time you went to the DMV. That's an example of local government, but still it's government. Think about the last time you went to the post office at a rush time. Oh, I don't know. Let's say lunch, when you've got the time to go. Hey, I'm going out. I'm going to grab a bite, grab a sandwich, and hit the post office. I'll be back in a little while. And what happens when you get to the post office? Well, you stand in line behind all the other people doing the same thing you're doing, taking that time on your lunch break to send that package or have something sent registered mail or whatever. And how many windows are open? You're nodding your head. You've been through this, haven't you? Where you've noticed that not all the windows are open. Sometimes only one out of several are open. Me, personally, I've been in more than one post office, not just one location. I've been in more than one post office, both for work and personal use, personal business, at lunchtime, and stood in line behind dozens of people, and you could hear people on their lunch break, post office workers on their lunch break, in the back, and there's one window open. That tells me everything I need to know about government efficiency. And that is one reason the Obamacare website is still experiencing glitches 6 years after its disastrous launch. Yowzer. Hey, how about this? You know, they tell us, this is another absurd, almost said obscene. It is. It's another absurdity. How about this? If you were born in the year 1823, would you think you'd still be able to vote in the United States of America? I know you're counting on your fingers and toes. No, that's a long, that's almost 200 years ago. Well, in Detroit, you can. One registered voter in the city of Detroit was born almost 200 years ago, according to a lawsuit. This still active voter would have been born 14 years before Michigan became a state. Sounds fishy, right? Well, that's not all. This ancient voter appears to be one of thousands falsely registered in Detroit, many of whom died a decade ago or more, yet were still able to drag themselves from their graves to vote in the most important election of our lifetimes. Although, I guess not their lifetimes. This week, the Public Interest Legal Foundation filed a lawsuit against Detroit election officials, claiming numerous such instances of demonstrable voter fraud. Remember now, our friends, the Democrats, tell us voter fraud isn't real. Oh, that's just something Republicans talk about when they can't win elections. Really? After combing through voter records for 2 years, the public interest law firm released some pretty astonishing findings. During the 2016 election, Detroit had 511,786 registered voters, despite only 479,267 voting age residents, according to the lawsuit. In case you're trying to count that on your fingers and toes, that's more registered voters than there are actually people there registered to vote. Actually, residents, voting age. That's 32,500 people more who should have been booted off the list. Some of the names belong to people who were 105 years old or older. And the foundation flagged 4,788 registration files as potential duplicates or triplicates. Among more than 2,500 registered voters who were found to be likely dead, 65% or 1,629 registrants have been deceased for more than 10 years. Of those, 898 registrants have been deceased for more than 15 years, 324 more than 20 years, and 13 have been deceased for more than 25 years, according to the lawsuit. This spells trouble not just for Detroit's past, but for its near future. The Public Interest Legal Foundation President and General Counsel J. Christian Adams said in a statement, "The city of Detroit is failing to perform some of the most basic functions owed to its citizenry. The city government's nonchalant attitude towards addressing evidence of dead and duplicate registrations exposes yet another vulnerability in our voting systems as our nation works to improve election security before November 2020. So, are these thousands of fake voters actually influencing elections? Logan Churchwell, Communications and Research Director for the Public Interest Legal Foundation, said all of the apparent fraudulent registers brought up in the lawsuit are active, meaning their addresses are still good, and worst of all, they've voted at least often enough within the past few years not to be flagged as dormant. They're active. Christy Jensen, the Michigan Democratic Party executive director, has argued that the lawsuit doesn't claim any voter fraud and is meant to make voters have less confidence in what is happening in their communities. Churchwell, however, said the point of the suit isn't to upend the election of any the results of any elections. He said, "Our argument is the city of Detroit is creating an environment where voter fraud can occur and go undetected." The real concern is why no one working for the city of Detroit apparently fought to flag, for instance, that one voter was listed as having been born in 1823. This voter, Churchwell explains, has been registered since 2008. Stop and think about that. Born in 1823 and registered to vote in 2008. This person was dust in a box, according to their birth records, by 2008, but they were still able to register to vote. And still, there's no system catching these mistakes. And that, my friend, is absurd. And it's obscene. But it is business as usual for the Democrat Party. The party that can't win elections on their policies and principles. So they have to rig everything in their favor in order to come out on top. And when you tell them, and when you expose them, they say, oh, that's just conspiracy theory. That's not real.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch.
Oh, oh, no!
Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Mark Congleton here, driving the bus through Crazy Town and hoping all is well with you. Hey, just a quick bit of housekeeping, a reminder. This Friday will be the last Daily Perspective podcast for 2019. Taking a couple of weeks off, spending time with family, sleeping late. No, just kidding. I'm going to sleep really late. But the thing is that I'm going to take the next couple of weeks off and come back on January 6th, the 6th of January. And depending on how things work out, there may be another little brief hiatus in late January around the Martin Luther King weekend. It kind of depends because I've got a potential out-of-town business thing I may have to take care of. And I may have to travel. I may be going to the Smokies. And seriously, it's work. It's not. I'm not going to the Smokies on Martin Luther King weekend with all of those people there. Because if you've ever been there during that weekend, you know it's slammed. It's packed. It's crazy. I mean, the parkway is a parking lot. You know, I will be going to do some work if everything pans out. I just don't know yet. It was mentioned to me yesterday, and hey, I'll call you and let you know if we're going to do that. Okay. Call me sometime soon then. Let me know. Boys got to make plans. Anyway, we'll see. But that's all for housekeeping. Last podcast of the year this Friday. First one on the 6th of January for 2020. And then everything back to Abby Normal as we possibly can make it happen. Okay? All right. In the stack of stories, I had this for yesterday. And because of the way things went yesterday, and I just got crazy and rambled on about my weekend and tied up a half of the podcast and getting started late because of tech glitches and the like, I just never got this one. And I decided, you know what, after I do the first couple of absurd stories, I really need to get to this one because I think somebody's life is in danger. And this is why. Rudy Giuliani, the president's attorney, has gone public on Twitter with some pretty astounding accusations. He's made some allegations, which I think he has made for his own protection. And let's go through the story and see if maybe you think the same. The cryptic tweet posted Sunday on Twitter by former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani, who now serves as Trump's personal lawyer, reads as follows. Quote, "In my next thread of tweets, I will be sharing some of the evidence I have garnered through hundreds of hours of research. Turn notifications on and stay tuned." Giuliani recently traveled to Ukraine and Hungary to collect information ahead of the impeachment trial in the Senate, assuming House Democrats vote in lockstep to impeach Trump. There, he met with state officials, reportedly looking into pay-to-play schemes involving Joe Biden, his son Hunter, and other Democrats. He wrote, "After hundreds of hours and months of research, I have garnered witnesses and documents which reveal the truth behind this impeachment, which includes no wrongdoing by President Trump. These threads only touch the surface. Read and watch all. More to come." He goes on in the next tweet. "Evidence revealed that corruption in 2016 was so extensive, it was POTUS's duty to to ask for U.S.-Ukraine investigation. Impeachment is part of Dem cover-up. Extortion, bribery, and money laundering goes beyond Biden's. Also, DNC collusion with Ukraine to destroy candidate Trump. Then Giuliani posted a video of Biden threatening to withhold $1 billion from Ukraine unless they fired a prosecutor who was reportedly investigating Burisma Holdings, the natural gas company that paid Hunter Biden millions. He wrote, "You can question a witness's credibility, but you cannot question hard documentary evidence, which each firsthand witness part of this investigation provide." Biden withheld the U.S. aid to Ukraine to pressure the government to remove Viktor Shokin from the prosecutor general's office. And he said in this video, which you have seen, I know you have seen this, I know you have. He said, "I looked at them and said, I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor is not fired, you're not getting the money." Well, son of a bleep, he got fired. And they put in place someone who was solid at that time. That's what Biden said in the video that's been all over the place. And I know you've probably seen that video. And I'm trying to get it to pull up here. Nah, it's going to take too long. Giuliani continued with a tweet on Shokin, saying the Ukrainian prosecutor who was investigating Burisma barely survived being poisoned. Here's what that tweet said. "Witness Viktor Shokin holds docs proving money laundering by Burisma and Biden's. Fired due to VP Biden's threat not to release $1 billion in vital U.S. aid. Shokin's med records show he was poisoned, died twice, and was revived. Lots of heads will roll in Ukraine if this opens up." Giuliani then tweeted about the man who took over for Shokin and Marie Yovanovitch, the former United States ambassador to Ukraine, who was fired by Trump. He says, "Witness Yuri Lutsenko, inheritor of Shokin's office. Records proving Ambassador Yovanovitch perjured herself at least twice. Docs showing she was denying visas to witnesses who could prove Biden and Dem corruption. Clear doc proof of money laundering by Burisma and Biden's." He followed with this. "Dem's impeachment for innocent conduct is intended to obstruct the below investigations of Obama-era corruption. Billions of laundered money, billions mostly U.S. dollars widely misused, extortion, bribery, DNC collusion with Ukraine to destroy candidate Trump. Much more to come." Ukraine is at the heart of the impeachment inquiry into Trump, who Democrats say asked the Ukrainian president for a favor, investigating a state natural gas company there connected to Joe and Hunter Biden. Trump told reporters last week that Giuliani's trip was successful and that the former New York City mayor is going to make a report, I think, quote, going to make a report, I think, to the attorney general and to Congress. He says he has a lot of good information. I have not spoken to him about that information yet. He's not told me what he found, but I think he wants to go before Congress and also the attorney general and the Department of Justice. I hear he has found plenty. And now he's gone public on social media, on Twitter, to lay out some of the allegations about what he has found. And as I said before I got into this article from Daily Wire, I think it's entirely possible, given the circumstances and the depths that the Democrats have gone to in the past and are going to right now, that Rudy may well have exposed this stuff just so he could go on the public record to protect himself, lest something happen to him, like being poisoned, or possibly suddenly deciding in the dark of night to commit suicide. So now it's in the public. It's in the public record. People know what he has had to say. Of course, the left is going to turn up their nose at this and say, well, that's just more conspiracy theory from these people who are putting out conspiracy theory because they know how guilty they are, yada, yada, yada. But we keep seeing this pattern of behavior coming from the left. And you've been told many times that when Democrats, leftist progressives make accusations, they are projecting. And nothing could be more true. They are projecting. When they point a finger at someone on the right and accuse them of something, you can just about bet everything you own that that is exactly what they are up to themselves. And they're pointing that finger and going public and accusing someone else of that behavior in order to distract everyone so that they all turn and look at this other person and give them time to cover themselves so they can't be found guilty for what they're up to. So Rudy Giuliani has made what by many would be considered a blockbuster accusation. And I think he did it to protect his own life.
Best way to spread Christmas cheer is singing loud for all to hear.
Merry Christmas. And welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Mark Congleton here for this hour, daily hour of observation, insight, and some absurdity. And speaking of absurdity, I wanted to play something for you because it's getting colder. People are experiencing inclement weather. And I saw this morning that in the Northeast, the northeastern section of the country, after all of this bluster that's gone through, is going to be experiencing some pretty cold weather. Really, really, really cold. And it just made me think, I remember Brad Stein talking about the cold. And I think it's an appropriate time to play it.
It's so cold, it's so cold, it's so cold. Quit being ungrateful. If you are an American, you live in a country that can offer you any possible type of weather you would want. You can go there. That's my point. Either move to the weather you like or shut up. Let me tell you how cold it was. I was in Winnipeg, Canada once in January. You ready for this? 70 below! 70! And people live there on purpose. I could understand if it was a place of exile. But people want to be there with their kids. Now, I was there to work, thus I wasn't adapting, and I wasn't whining, I wasn't staying. I tried to reason, hey, it's 70 below, something's broken! I swear all the Canadians, oh, it should have been here last year, it was really cold. God bless them for their adaptation and accepting it. See, I don't want to reach a point in my life where 70 below zero is considered nippy. Thank you. Don't want to live in a place where you go out to get the mail and then you die. I don't want to live in a town where everybody smokes because nobody wants to prolong their life expectancy. Got like 3-year-olds. You sick yet? No! I don't even have a tumor yet. 70 below, people getting locked out of the house, honey.
He freezes. Oh my gosh. So kudos to those of you living in northern climes where it's about to get really cold. Remember, you chose to live there. Going from the ridiculous to the even more absurd, the news media has proven itself time and time and time again to be basically just wrong. So wrong. Did I mention they're wrong? I think they're wrong. But it's a supercut of all these people in the news media who got the dossier dead wrong. We know now from the IG report, from Horowitz's Inspector General's report, that the dossier was just garbage. We that's been confirmed. We all knew it from everything that has already been out there, that that it was a product of opposition research by the Clinton campaign and the DNC, and that it's a work of fiction. Basically, it's just a work of fiction. And the FBI knew it was a work of fiction at the time they used it in order to acquire FISA warrants for spying on the Trump campaign. They knew. We know this to be fact now. And there were those saying so even back then. But our good friends in the news media can't be bothered with the truth.
Parts of the now infamous dossier on Trump have proven to be true.
I know the history of the dossier, but it hasn't been discredited. In fact, it's been the opposite. It's been corroborated.
Much of the dossier has been corroborated.
This discredited dossier,
it
which
hasn't
was
been
paid
discredited.
For, paid for.
Your intel community has corroborated all of the details in there. The all meeting.
Some of the substantive content of the dossier, we were able to corroborate in our intelligence community assessment, which from other sources, in which we had very high confidence. So
we know that with the FISA application, the relevant parts of Christopher Steele's dossier were corroborated.
Say that if the application included information from the dossier, it would only be after the FBI had, in fact, corroborated information through its own investigation.
We also know that as time goes on, more and more parts of the Steele dossier get corroborated.
So when the president just refers to it as fake dossier, that is false?
I don't think that is the accurate characterization for the entirety of the dossier.
Clear, investigators have corroborated part of the dossier.
The dossier has been corroborated by the intelligence community.
U.S. investigators have corroborated some of the allegations in that dossier. Yes. Although
we do know that parts of it have been corroborated.
It's not been corroborated, but it hasn't been disproven either.
Is there anything in the dossier that has been disproven?
No.
But not one thing has been disproven. No major thing from the dossier has been conclusively disproven.
To date, none of it has been disproven, and whole big parts of it are holding up.
The dossier holds up well. None of it has been disproven.
All of the allegations in it, I don't know that anything has been disproven.
It's a fact that none of it, not one word, has been disproven. In fact, a lot of it turned out to be right on the money.
Former high-ranking intelligence officials have told us on the record that there is nothing in the Steele dossier that they know to have been disproven.
Much of the dossier has been corroborated. Do you not accept that?
I don't agree with that, Allison.
This is our reporting, and this is what crime-fighting agencies have said, that the FBI would not have just taken a dossier to the FISA court and used that as their predicate for the surveillance. They had to corroborate it themselves. That's how they operate.
Oh, is it? Did you notice how that went from absolutely dead certain 100% to sort of kind of mostly to, and they kept equivocating, and it kept changing all the way through the time. The couple of 2.5-3 years that this has been going on. Did you notice how the news media went from absolute 100% certainty down to, well, most of it has not been disproven? Because as time went on, it became more and more obvious that the dossier was basically a cleverly arranged stack of lies. It was a work of fiction. And now we know that to be true. And we know that the FBI knew that this was true. And we know that the FBI, knowing this, still presented it to the FISA court and never told the FISA court what they really knew about the dossier. Because if they had, they would not have gotten what they needed, the permission they needed to do the spying that they did on the Trump campaign. The FBI's hands are dirty. They've been caught. But the news media, for all this time, did not want to believe that. Did you catch that in the supercut as well? That the FBI wouldn't do this? The assumption that the FBI, the agency, the people in the agency, are squeaky clean Boy Scouts. Pure as the driven snow. And would never do anything illegal. That assumption was there by the news media. And that is a key point that you need to remember when you watch the mainstream news media, the leftist progressive press. They make the assumption that these institutions are pure and that they do no wrong. And as a human being, you and I have to admit that's not the case. People do wrong things for various reasons, whether it's personal, whether it's political, whether whatever. They do things for various motivations. And in this case, because government has operated the way it operates for so long, behind a facade of nobility and integrity, false integrity, people just assume you can trust the government. You can trust their agencies. You can trust the intel agencies. You can trust the FBI. You can trust the CIA. You can trust... You can't. Because they're people. And people do wrong for various reasons, whatever their motivations may be. And in this case, the motivation was to cover the fact that government is not what the people think it is. That government has been running basically a scam on the American people for a very, very long time. And that government steps in front of TV cameras for the news networks and speaks a certain way. And they talk about dignity. They talk about the honor of the office. They talk about all of these things as though they are sacred. And then when they go through the door to the places that nobody is allowed to go and they have their meetings, that's the last thing that's actually going on. When we think back over the last 2.5 to 3 years and we see what's been happening with the Democrats and Donald Trump, we can see that someone who is not an insider, someone who is not part of the political elite, comes in to the mix and tries to do his job the way his job is supposed to be done according to the law of our land, the Constitution. That threatens so many people that suddenly, out of the woodwork, you have people coming out to claim all kinds of nasty things about the president. The Steele dossier is one of them. The women who have come forth and accused him of things are another. The audio tape with Billy Bush talking about grabbing women, that was something else. All of this effort to undermine this person because he's not part of their elite little insider club. And he is actually going to come in and do the job the way it's supposed to be done. If you've ever been in a job and you've taken pride in your work and you've done the job to your best ability, and had somebody sidle up to you and say, hey, slow down, you're making the rest of us look bad, you kind of have an idea of what's actually going on. Donald Trump has come into office and is doing the job a president's supposed to do. And the government has bastardized the public view of that job so much that now it's obvious they haven't been doing the job for a long time. And they're afraid that the public is going to find out what they've really been doing.
Way to spread Christmas cheer is singing loud for all to hear.
Merry Christmas. And welcome back to The Daily Perspective. I told you earlier that a story I wanted to get to about the whole Chick-fil-A thing. Well, I just shuffled everything and pulled it back to the top, and I want to get into this. It's coming from heritage.org, and it's an article written by Emily Cowell. It's a commentary article. And let's dig in. The angry backlash against their belief that marriage is between a man and a woman started on social media. Soon, activists called for a boycott. Then officials banned them for selling in a key market. Faced with mounting social, economic, and legal attacks on their business, the company's leadership was faced with an impossible decision. Conscience or livelihood? No, the scene was not the Georgia corporate headquarters of Chick-fil-A, America's third largest fast food chain. It was the home of Steve and Bridget Tens, a Catholic family who run Country Mill Farms in Michigan. A Facebook discussion about their beliefs on marriage led LGBT activists to call for boycotts. The East Lansing City Council declared that their beliefs themselves constituted discrimination and banned them from selling their apples at the farmers' market. The controversy over Chick-fil-A's decision to end financial giving to the Salvation Army and Fellowship of Christian Athletes has spotlighted the conundrum faced by people nationwide whose values don't line up with progressives' new orthodoxy. We can make too little and too much out of this incident. One way to underestimate it is to think it only happens on Wall Street. It's happening as much on Main Street, with more dire economic consequences for smaller businesses and for individuals. Another mistake would be to assume that this is a one-off in a culture war from which businesses can simply choose to drop out. Chick-fil-A didn't start the war over marriage, and they won't be able to simply drop out. Instead, LGBT activists are forcing them to pick sides. The attacks on Country Mill Farms and Chick-fil-A follow a pattern. Four types of attack lead to freedom's decline. It starts with social ostracization, then economic discrimination, then legal punishment, including criminal penalties, and often ends in violence, either by the state or the mob. We pay attention to these attacks overseas in their final stages, but often miss how gradual the decline of freedom is and fail to recognize them in our own country. In 2012, when Chick-fil-A CEO Dan Cathy said he believes that billions of Jews, Christians, and Muslims around the world believe about marriage, LGBT activists swiftly attacked in the media and launched boycotts that have become international. Officials sought to ban the restaurant from selling in airports, college campuses, and metropolitan centers. When the Family Research Council supported Cathy's stance on marriage, a vigilante set out to assassinate its employees simply because they disagree on marriage. A security guard foiled the plan, but not before taking a bullet himself. Chick-fil-A's story includes all four types of attack. Worldwide, the forces who seek to impose orthodoxy follow the same playbook. There is one right belief, which is sacred. Everyone must conform. Dissenters must be punished. And as Chick-fil-A is learning, there is no enough in the vocabulary of the high priests of progressivism. After they announced the end of their support for the Salvation Army and Fellowship of Christian Athletes, LGBT group GLAAD said the company should next, quote, unequivocally speak out against the anti-LGBTQ reputation that their brand represents, end quote. Others said the company should make amends for past statements and deeds by donating to pro-LGBT groups. Reparations, anyone? The cornerstone of the LGBT movement's legal strategy is to convince people that mere disagreement on marriage and biological sex is anti-LGBT discrimination, even though it's no such thing. Tim Gill, the multimillionaire whom Rolling Stone calls the mega donor behind the LGBTQ rights movement, has bragged that these laws will be used to punish the wicked. Here is where we could make too much out of this story. Chick-fil-A's leadership reported decision, Chick-fil-A leadership's reported decision to disavow charities that align with values that the company once espoused has demoralized many. And millions are still hoping the company will issue a clear statement of support for the deserving charities that progressives have sought to demonize. But ultimately, the future of freedom won't only be determined in corporate boardrooms. It will be determined by whether the American people and their representatives can rightly distinguish between disagreement and discrimination. Firefighters, pilots, entertainers, and tech CEOs have lost jobs, promotions, and access to markets because they refused to go along with the new orthodoxy. The Tens family chose to fight and are 4 years into litigation against the city of East Lansing. The future of freedom depends on whether we can live with difference and respect the consciences of all in the marketplace. If not, we risk seeing things get even uglier. Again, that's from heritage.org. It's a piece that originally appeared in the Chicago Tribune by Emily Kao, K-A-K-A-O. She's a director of the Richard and Helen DeVos Center for Religion and Civil Society at the Heritage Foundation. And she hits the nail squarely on the head. She is completely and totally correct. The new orthodoxy will never accept anything but what it wants, what it demands. I told you about what GLAD said when Chick-fil-A made this decision, that the company should next unequivocally speak out against the anti-LGBTQ reputation that their brand represents. In other words, they should spend time and money demonizing their prior positions in order to make it abundantly clear that they are now pro-LGBTQ. GLAD and the rest ignore the fact that Chick-fil-A has never discriminated. It has employed members of the LGBTQ community. It has always served them. It has never discriminated against anyone. The fact that the head honcho of the company has his own view, his own personal opinion, and was quoted in an article, which, by the way, if we're being honest here, was probably not read by very many people at all, because it was in the Baptist press. Is that correct? I think it's right. It was in a denominational publication. And trust me, if you belong to a Baptist church, you may have heard of it, but odds are you've never read it. I would say that a very small percentage of people who are members of Baptist churches have read anything published in the Baptist press. But someone got wind of it and realized that this went against the grain of the new orthodoxy and decided it was time for a cleansing. And for 7 years, they have kept on pushing and pushing and pushing. And they never stop. And that's because enough is never enough. The only thing that will ever be enough is complete and total submission. That is progressivism. That is leftism. That is fascism. And that's all there is for today. God bless you. Have a great one. We'll see you back here tomorrow on the next edition of The Daily Perspective. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.